Good morning. Oh, come on. I know it's early. Good morning. Thank you. All right. So it's a pleasure to be here with you. Let me first, of course, thank the caucus for accepting our abstract. Let me also acknowledge certainly all of the co-authors that were part of the presentation that are not here, but also recognize my team in the Institute for Research on Men's Health, Dr. McKissick, Emily Cornish, and Donatisa Dean, who's ditched us and went to grad school, but we love her anyway. So the other thing I'll say before I get started is there are copies of the report cards around. There's some in the back, and there's some next to Dr. Thompson over here. They make wonderful stocking stuffers and other wonderful things, so please take them with you, share them with your friends. Okay, on to the real work. So no, we don't have any relationships to disclose. So we started this work largely because there are a few states that actually have a coordinated strategy for at least even documenting or chronicling the health of men in the United States, and certainly not men's health disparities. And Tennessee is one of the few states that actually has had a series of these report cards, and this, what I'm going to talk about today, is the third of that series. And the goal is simply to monitor men's health disparities in the state, and provide both cross-sectional as well as trend data over time to look at sort of the patterns of health and health disparities among men. And then to utilize this tool and the opportunities that we've had to disseminate this as a way to educate advocates, practitioners, and policymakers about men's health and enable stakeholders to advance policy and practice. So this is clearly the report card itself. I'm highlighting this simply because these are the three organizations that were sort of most responsible for it. Certainly at Vanderbilt, I sort of led the effort, but certainly along with the Tennessee Department of Health that did basically all the analysis. So we used existing data, which was a huge part of this, that we didn't want to create new data. We wanted this to be a model that was easily replicable across other states. And then Meharry Medical College certainly was a key part and also the dissemination and collaboration efforts. These were the variety of sponsors, some in kind, some actually provided tangible dollars. So again, you see quite a range, and you're gonna see this theme of a lot of collaboration. Tennessee Men's Health Network was a great partner in this process and was very active, particularly in the dissemination efforts across the state. Again, I know you can't read this, but just highlighting the size of the team, and the point of this, again, is that this was a huge collaborative effort, and it wasn't just about creating the document, but it was about creating a strategy to disseminate this and to get people engaged in this conversation about what is men's health, what's the state of men's health in the state, and how do we need to move this forward across the different parts of the state where the profiles may be different than just what the state picture overall looks like. And so these were just specific people who did specific things. So the sources of the data, as what I've mentioned, again, are existing data that's collected regularly by the state health department. So we use death certificate data that are provided, that are captured by the state health department, infectious disease data, the behavioral risk factor surveillance survey data that every state collects. There was an interesting change and shift. It's a good thing, but it's also sort of a challenge sometimes that the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance Survey, for those who don't know, is an annual survey that the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, they coordinate across all the states. And in previous years, they had only always done landlines. And they had always, you know, it's a phone-based survey, so they'd only done landlines. And in the most recent iteration, they had actually sort of added cell phones, which was a really important thing since, as you can imagine, there's probably a huge age shift in who actually still has landlines and still uses them versus those who do not. So that was an important change, but that also shaped what we could utilize as trend data, so we didn't have a lot of trend data that we could use from the behaviors because they shifted and you can't really compare adequately, you know, prior to 2011 and after. We used some census data from the American Community Survey to sort of just talk about some basic sort of social issues, and then the population health profile data as well. So this was, as you'll see, one of the things that I'll touch on is just, again, part of this is the framing and the packaging more so than necessarily the data itself, or, you know, all the plural that I'm supposed to use but never remember to. So the data sources, again, I just sort of mentioned, but this is how we sort of, we tried to figure out what would be an adequate comparison. So how do you make data sort of relevant to people, and how do you sort of give them a sense of whether or not these things are good or bad or whatever? So we had quite a bit of conversations about what should be the source of comparison. So being in the South, you know, one thing is, you know, are we just more interested in how people in Tennessee compare to the states, for example, that Tennessee touches? So, you know, do you care that you're better than Alabama or Kentucky versus do you actually care that you're better than Idaho? You know, so there was all this attention to, you know, how do we make this case or how do we sort of decide which of these groups we would do as a comparison? All of the choices that we're making seem somewhat arbitrary if we didn't just use the Healthy People 2020 goals, which you'll see are challenging in some ways because some of the things that we're looking at didn't actually have male-specific goals, or they were sort of goals that really weren't aligned with some of the issues and data that we had, so we sort of were left with that. You'll also see that we were quite generous. I know my students would love to have a grading scale like this, but so, you know, the center, the bullseye is, of course, meeting the Healthy People 2020 goal. An A is better than 10% within the goal, so that's about normal. A B is within 10 to 30% of the goal, so we started getting really generous. C is 30 to 60. D is 60 to 100% away from the goal. And an F was more than 100% away from the goal. Now, they had to do this because if we actually just did a traditional sort of grading scale, basically most of the things, if not all of them, would probably be Fs for most of the groups of men, which is not terribly instructive or helpful. And so we had to figure out how to adjust the scale to give people some sense that there is some potential diversity and hope for what we're actually looking at, so this just wasn't this doom and gloom kind of picture. We also wanted to put this in some context. So these were two slightly different innovations that we had prior years. So the first thing was to actually put this in the context of life expectancy and look at this in relation to women, only in the sense that to, again, start to make the case that there's a need to address men's health if for no other reason than men live shorter lives than women. Now, we can talk about why men live shorter lives than women, but there's certainly a need that at least provides some case for there's something we need to do with men to figure out how more effectively to address the needs of the population. The other key part of the context is this age profile wave thing that we've got going on down here. And part of the reason that we included this figure is because it may not be completely obvious, but what you see is if you look at the white males, they're largely, the majority of white males are sort of in that middle age sort of group, the largest percentage and proportion of them. Whereas if you look at the Hispanic males, they're definitely, their largest groups are in younger adults. Well, if our major sort of metric is death certificate data, and a lot of the things that we're talking about are things that are likely to occur more in older age, Hispanic men look like they're just the epitome of health simply because they tend to be younger. It's not necessarily because if we actually had the data to do the apples-to-apples comparison that we would actually necessarily see that they're necessarily better, but the data sort of need to be sort of considered in that particular context. We did actually also, for the first time, age-adjust the data, and so that was something that was also a really important change. I know that's not terribly surprising that we needed to do that, but that was an important thing that we had not done in previous years. So just to give you sort of a picture of some of the things that we found and just some of the basic things that we changed. So in previous years, the report card literally, the reason it's called a report card is it literally looked like a report card. So it had percentages, it had the grades. It only tended to focus on things that were doing worse and not including things that were actually doing better, which was, you know, an important, again, change to actually focus on are there things that give us some hope or should we just basically, you know, throw our hands up and feel like we're helpless when we're trying to think about the health of men. And so not surprisingly, when you look at sort of the causes of death for adult men in the state, you know, it mirrors sort of what we've seen in most other places. Heart disease and cancer are, you know, the leading cause of death certainly within the state, and then followed by, you know, a variety of other sort of smaller sort of issues, but certainly the bulk of them are from those two. The other thing, you know, is to show that when you break it out by age-specific profiles, it actually shows you a slightly different picture that certainly, again, for those who know these areas, we actually, you know, did this by basically sort of phase of life and tried to look at sort of this within an adult developmental framework and sort of said, you know, for men who are young adults, the leading cause of death were certainly, again, not terribly surprising, accidents, work-related and so forth, not necessarily motor vehicle, followed quickly by motor vehicle accidents and then homicide, which was very different than the typical things you see in middle-aged and older men, heart disease and cancer. So again, that was important because it was important to sort of realize that if we were going to do things that were providing some larger set of messaging, certainly you could try to do it by race and ethnicity, but if you didn't have, and we didn't have, the resources to try to do that, there could be some potential traction to looking at this by age profile, because there's going to be a lot of commonalities within men who are in those particular age groups. The other thing we did is to try to get a picture of the profiles of men across the state and to map the data. Again, it's not terribly innovative in the sense that people have been doing mapping for a long time, but they hadn't really looked at this as something that we do to get a picture of how and where to intervene or where we need to focus our efforts for men. And so the other sort of interesting conversation we had is this is by health department region, not by county. And there was a lot of conversation about how we should sort of segment this and how we should map this, and should we do it by county. We were actually discouraged from doing it by explicitly by county, even though you see some mention of the counties to just give some orientation to it, because there were fears, again, if we're looking at this as something that may help to connect with policy, of either resources, this being sort of a tool that people would use to either direct resources to certain places or pull them from other places. And so they didn't want this to be used as sort of the front page news of, oh, nobody should locate a business in Shelby County because their health is so poor that you'd never want to sort of locate a business there. You're going to spend all your money basically in healthcare costs, so don't go there if you want to locate a new business. So there's just a lot of conversation that was not very subtle, to be honest with you, about, you know, where we should, how we should frame and, you know, picture this. And so part of the reason, again, of you seeing us trying to do this dance is because we didn't want this to be used as something that could be negative or damaging to the economy of the state by not sort of encouraging people in this, who are coming to the state to locate businesses in the area as well. So that was a huge part of this. But again, just to give you some profile of, you know, different parts of the regions of the state, and Tennessee, the reason that the flag on the cover has three stars is because it's sort of generally broken out into three regions. So you have the western part of the state where Memphis is, where you see Shelby, that's where Memphis is, and then you have the middle part of the state where Davidson County is, that's where Nashville is, and then the western part of the state where Chattanooga and some of the other larger parts of the state are as well. So you have these different pockets and different regions of the state that are important. And then we did the same thing for cancer rates, but you also see, again, even though a lot of things are similar when we think about determinants of cancer and determinants of heart disease, particularly with a lot of behaviors, you also see very different patterns of, you know, who was, where the rates were the highest and where they were concentrated, but then you also see places like Shelby County that were high in both instances. So part of the picture, or part of the point of this, again, was to get, you know, again, everybody sort of rallied around this issue of men's health. So again, trying to make this a little more user-friendly. For those who are not terribly high in numeracy or just get freaked out by numbers, we sort of wanted to present this in a way that you could flip through it and just make it easy to sort of figure out who's high and who's low in these particular areas. And so it was, you know, just trying to figure out what are simple ways to present this. So these are all death certificate data, which we know has its own limitations, but it gives you a picture clearly that the cancer rates, particularly for black men, are especially high. But it also shows you that for all groups of men, the cancer rates are higher than the goals that we'd have for Healthy People 2020. And so it sort of shows, again, that this is not just something that would focus on black males. The other reason that we wanted to break this out by racial and ethnic group is because it also highlights that when you think about men's health disparities, typically the conversation focuses on black and Latino men. But when you look at things like motor vehicle accidents, suicide rates, unintentional injuries, white males actually have the highest rates. And so we wanted this to be something, again, where everybody saw that they had a stake in this, and this wasn't just something about us trying to paint this picture of needing more attention to minority health, but this is something that if you're really going to deal with men's health across the state, you really have to pay attention to the unique needs of each population group that you have within the state. And again, you see the stark difference in homicide rates versus suicide rates. White males significantly higher than some of the other groups, and the black male homicide rates are just, you know, astronomical here, as unfortunately they are in a lot of other places. We also added, that's why I gave you the copies, because I know you can't read this, but added, just try to give some context to the report. We didn't want to make these things terribly long, but sort of what's the progress sort of over time, and particularly have sections that are looking at the profiles of the different groups. So we did have sort of, you know, what are the things that where white males are doing well, what are the things where their needs are particularly important for us to pay attention to, looking at the trend data over time, and same thing with the other two racial and ethnic groups that we had data on. Another, as I sort of mentioned earlier, one of the big issues with the report card is historically the way that the launches have been done is to have a big event in Nashville, ironically with the football coaches, and that became a problem because every year that they had the football coach was not there by the time we did the next report card. So we decided not to do that this time, even though depending on, you know, how you feel about Vanderbilt football, they could get rid of the current coach, but sorry. He's struggling a bit, they're struggling, they're going to be all right, but, you know, anyway, so that wasn't the reason why we decided not to do this, but so one of the things that was important, though, is, again, if this is really going to be a statewide effort, this couldn't all just be focused on Nashville. Nashville's a state capital, it draws all the resources, this shouldn't just be a Vanderbilt thing where it's basically about, you know, Vanderbilt sort of using this as a platform for itself, but this really needed to be something that helped to engage a broader range of people and across the state. So what you see is these launch events that we had across the state to really talk about, you know, do a brief part about sort of the report card itself, but to really engage local leaders across the state in what is the sort of local relevance of the state profile and what are the unique health issues that are going on for males in that free part of the state. So we had, again, the very active involvement of Mike Leventhal from Tennessee Men's Health Network. We had a lot of involvement from faith organizations, other institutions, community-based organizations, and sort of attached it to existing things as well as created some new spaces for these things to have a voice in a space. We also brought some politicians as well as just other folks from different areas of the state to sort of talk about these different things. We did have a kickoff event at in Nashville, but actually not at Vanderbilt, again, for the same reasons that we mentioned, because we didn't want this to just be sort of a Vanderbilt-centric sort of thing. And so these are just pictures from the events. We made sure that we co-hosted everything. And as you saw, you know, highlighted other groups more so than just trying to make this about, you know, our institute at Vanderbilt. As much as I love our institute at Vanderbilt, I didn't want this to just be sort of a Vanderbilt thing. We also wanted to add more, of course, the limitations, because that I don't think that had been specifically in there before. But again, giving some substance to specific strategies. Now, this got to be a little politically dicey because, of course, certainly you have to sort of negotiate the politics of different sort of philosophies of why people are unhealthy and what, you know, what are the reasons for that. But it was important to at least try to provide some, again, some tangible steps that people could take at a policy level and potentially individually for, you know, how you could actually improve the health of groups. And then provide some conclusions and potential next steps of things we could do going forward. Tried to update our website and provide more just additional resources from other groups, links to other groups, make the report card available on the website as well. Tried to update it with new information that's coming out on a regular basis. And then to just, again, think about this as more than just a data collection tool that sort of just represents sort of a static sort of thing, but to realize this can be a conversation starter for people around how do we think about some of the issues related to men and men's health, and how do you engage a broad range of men around these kinds of issues. So if men are able to see, well, you know, if you talk to men, for example, who are younger adults around, you know, some of their health issues, and you actually see these patterns of risk and so forth that we sort of typically see and associate with again, the leading cause of death, perhaps that would be an entryway into a conversation around the kinds of risks and so forth they may be taking to actually address and help them think more concretely about their health and what they may be doing or not doing. To try to, again, make the data and format more accessible than just having a bunch of tables of numbers and grades, to engage a much more broad range of different kinds of service providers, partners and so forth, again, faith-based organizations, racial and ethnic groups, service providers from HIV providers and so forth, and community-based organizations. And then, you know, again, try to engage these local groups to create more interest in the broader population. So just to conclude, this is one of the few states, and I believe one of the only, if not the only, that's done this sort of in consecutive years, where you've had this coordinated strategy for looking at men's health and men's health disparities over time. And despite the success that we had from previous report cards, that we wanted to sort of make this format a little more user-friendly if possible, and to, you know, potentially change some of the strategies. I should also say that these weren't just things that we sort of came up with at Vanderbilt. I didn't just sit in my office and play mad scientist and just came up with new stuff to do. We actually made sure that we engaged our community partners and the people across the state in several conversations about what kinds of changes would they want to see, what kinds of things that they want to do. We provided mini grants for those events that were across the state so they didn't have to try to raise those funds themselves. So we did those kinds of things to try to really foster this and make sure that we showed that we were truly serious about this partnership. But it may be an important model for other states, and I know Maryland, for example, has adopted this and done a similar report card, and there was some conversation at some national meetings around men's health that this might be a model for doing a national men's health report card. And providing data on disparities where all groups do better and worse gives a better picture of what kinds of things that may make this a more universal issue so that everybody sees that they have a stake in this. So thank you.